My father went missing when I was 13 years old. There weren't any reasons or goodbyes. He just vanished. Even though I was still young when he left, I knew my father really well, and there was something very odd about his disappearance. My mother, Rita Smith, believed that he had run away, and that was what she told everyone. But the running away story seemed out of place, as he had left all his clothing, his car, his wallet, basically all his belongings at home. No one ran away with nothing, and as the days passed by, it soon became clear to everyone that he was taken against his own will, and it wasn't long before he was deemed a missing person. The police and the detectives were soon involved in the matter. They carried out their routine questions, but that got them nowhere, so a massive search began. As I said earlier, I had just turned 13 at this point, so I was still a little kid, but I made sure that I joined every single search party that was carried out for my father. My mom wasn't too happy about this, as she said that I was too young to be joining the search parties, but I didn't care. All I wanted to do was to find my father. I might have only known him for 12 years, but I loved that man with all my heart. I knew that he wouldn't just leave, which is why I never agreed with my mom's claims. And since I now knew that there was a possibility he was out there, I swore that I would never give up until I found him. The first year soon passed by, and neither the police nor the search parties could find anything. As the second year started, I noticed that the efforts to find him from both the detectives and the search parties had reduced drastically. By the third year, the case had gone cold and the support from the community and the authorities had completely stopped. I watched as everyone around me stopped caring as they all assumed he was probably dead now. But even then, I was the only one who didn't stop or give up. I refused to believe that he was dead, as I knew he was out there. I was angry because I had to do it alone now, but I didn't blame anyone. I already knew people started to forget as time goes by, but he was my father, so I couldn't forget. Searching for my father became my number one priority, as I searched for him every single day after school. I searched in the woods surrounding our house, and I went from door to door asking if anyone had information about his whereabouts. My entire family, especially my mother, was worried about my well-being, as they begged me to stop, but I didn't listen. I didn't know why, but for some reason, I had this feeling every night while I lay on my bed that my father was close to me. My family had already accepted his unproven demise, but I had a gut feeling that he was out there, and I knew that I was close to him, which is why I didn't stop. As the years went by, my determination to find my father only increased, and my focus never wavered. I knew that I would find him one day, no matter how long it took. And unbeknownst to me, at that time, that day was quickly approaching. At this point, it had been about 8 years since my father's disappearance. I was 21 at the time, and I was in college studying criminal justice and criminology, with hopes of becoming a detective in the future. The year was 2009, and I had just come home from spring break, as I always continued my search whenever I came home. But it'd been 8 years of searching, and I hadn't found anything. So I decided to take a different approach. It'd been a while, but I decided to try to remember the last night I had seen my father. I essentially took my mind back to the crime scene to see if there was anything that I could pick up or notice. Since it was a traumatic event that happened during my childhood, I didn't have much trouble recollecting the events of that night. I was watching cartoons on the couch, and I remember my parents talking. They weren't arguing, but I could tell that they were having a pretty serious conversation. They talked for a couple of minutes before they went into my room for privacy. I'm guessing they didn't want me to hear what they were talking about. I'm pretty sure I slept on the couch that night, and that was the last time I saw my dad. After calmly recollecting the events of that night, I realized a very important detail. My mother, Rita, was the last person to see my dad before he disappeared. So I decided to talk to her. She was sitting in the living room, and I remember asking her if she could tell me anything that happened that night. My mother paused before saying, "It's been 8 years, Henry. 8 years since your father disappeared, and you're still on this wild goose chase. I know you loved your father, we all did. But don't you think it's time to let it go? You've let this entire incident consume you and define your life. You wanted to be a pilot when you were little, but You're studying criminology now because you want to be a detective and chase down your father? Please, son, I'm begging you to just let this go. I've already lost a husband, and I don't want to lose a son. My mother had tears in her eyes now. I knew my obsession with my father's disappearance bothered her and the family, but I didn't know it was that bad. I also knew that my mother, Rita, was a very good person. She had kind eyes, and she always found a way to smile, even when she was down. I didn't want to make her sad, so I apologized for my questions and went to my room. As I lay on my bed, my mother's words started to ring in my head, as I wondered if I had let the disappearance of my father consume me. I started to rethink everything at this point, as I thought about what I should do. But for some bizarre reason, I suddenly felt an incessant need to search my room. I knew it sounded crazy, but it was the last place I had seen my father before he disappeared, and as ridiculous as it sounded, I got up and started searching. I searched my cupboards, looked into the massive trunk in my room, and I even got a ladder to search my ceiling. I had torn my room apart at this point, and the only place I hadn't checked was under my bed. As I got on my knees to search, I remembered how my father would often play with me in my room, and he'd always say, "There's something under the bed," before reaching under my bed and pulling out a couple of my toys that I had thrown under there since I was a pretty messy kid. He'd then tell me to take care of my toys and to always arrange them properly after playing. These memories ran through my head as I pushed my bed to the side. As expected, underneath my bed was completely empty, as there was nothing there. But I did, however, notice something very strange. You see, we used wooden floors in our entire house, and for some unknown reason, the color of the wood under my bed was different from the color of the wood in my entire room. The wood under my bed had a light brown color, while the wood that covered the rest of my room was dark mahogany. I didn't need anyone to tell me that the wood around this area had been replaced, and I wondered why. I then knocked on that area of replaced wood, and to my surprise, it was hollow. So without a second thought, I got a crowbar and started tearing it open. It took me about 15 minutes to completely tear the floor apart, and when I was done, I stood in horror, as right under the wooden floor were human remains. I screamed as I hoped it wasn't who I thought it was, but deep down, I already knew who it was. My scream attracted my mother, who was now standing in my doorway. She was holding something behind her back and crying. I was still in shock, and I wondered what she was doing, but before I could ask, my mother said,
"You just couldn't leave it alone, could you? You just don't know when to give up. I thought we could move past this, but I see that's impossible. You are your father's son. You've destroyed this family now, and I hope you're happy, but I won't let this home crumble without a fight."
And with that, she lunged at me with a knife. I was overwhelmed with emotions at that point, as I had just found my father's remains under my bed, and for some bizarre reason, my own mother was now trying to kill me. I tried to maneuver her attacks, but I was injured in the process. My mother's kind eyes were now bloodshot red, and she continued to viciously attack me. There are no words to explain how I felt watching my mother attempt to kill me, but I kept my composure and managed to subdue her. She screamed and she thrashed about when I held her down, and the loud noises made our neighbors call 911. So it wasn't long before the police arrived. The revelations after that fateful day were nothing but shocking. An autopsy was carried out on the human remains, and it was confirmed to be my father, Joseph Smith. Apparently, he'd been stabbed in the throat by my mother that night. She then managed to wrap the corpse, pull the floorboards under my bed, and place the corpse under the wooden floor before covering it up with spare wood from the shed. Detectives questioned my mother, Rita, for an explanation or motive for the murder of my father. And while she did confess, she gave no reason as to why she killed her husband or why she tried to kill me. After some psychological evaluations, numerous specialists stated that my mother may be suffering from a peculiar form of both dissociative identity disorder, DID, and paranoid personality disorder, PPD, due to the contrast between her usual behavior and her behavior on the night of the murder and on the day she attacked me. They then added, that she might also be suffering from a unique form of both schizophrenia and paranoid schizophrenia. I would have never guessed that my mother Rita suffered from these mental health issues, as she always seemed calm and docile in front of us, and it pains me to think that she had watched me search for my father all these years while knowing that he was under my very own bed. The morbid case shook our entire town, and it basically destroyed our family. My mother was put in a psychiatric facility to undergo further examinations for 6 months, and when she was released, she stood trial. Her defense tried to plead not guilty by reason of insanity due to dissociative identity disorder, but she was found guilty for the murder, as the court stated that the condition does not preclude criminal responsibility. The judge stated that even though an individual may have distinct personalities that control his or her behavior, they are still liable for their actions. So she was sentenced to life in prison. It's been about 14 years since this incident. I sometimes wish that I didn't find my father's remains, as my actions have torn our family apart. But during those moments, I reminded myself how much I wanted to get justice for my father, and I don't regret it. I graduated, and I am currently a part of the New York City Police Department. I work under the Detective Bureau. I usually specialize in missing person cases, as I hope to bring peace of mind to all those who went through or who are still going through what I did when I was 13.
Hello, guys. My name is Barry. I'm just an ordinary person like you. But recently, something happened that I just couldn't ignore. Something that gave purpose to my life. Something that changed me forever. Before I tell you what happened, you should know something about me. As a child, I was a missing person. Some men kidnapped me right after school and demanded a huge reward for me. My parents had to go into a huge amount of debt to pay the ransom, and the police never found out, as my parents were told that they would hurt me if they did. 30 years have passed since that fateful day. As soon as I was old enough, I moved out of that town, as everything reminded me of my time in captivity. But you know what? I decided to go back. I knew I had to fight my fears, and this was a great opportunity to see my parents, my brother, and my nephew, whom I've never met until now. Once I got back here, all the memories came flooding back. The darkness of the night, the abandoned factory where they kept me, the street where they put me in that huge white van. All these things seemed like a part of a distant nightmare, and now they had become real. Once I got home, I settled into what used to be my room and adapted to the town for the next few days. I knew that being here was going to be difficult, but somehow I was managing. I spent time with my family, and my nephew had a chance to get to know me. For several days I was happy, but I couldn't help but think that something was wrong. A few days later, I was watching the news on TV. Some children in the village had been kidnapped, and among them was my nephew. I was shocked by the news. My brother still hadn't told me anything. Why? So as not to scare our parents? I felt a huge sense of panic and decided to turn off the TV as to not think about it, even for a few seconds. At that moment, I could escape from the TV, but not from my phone, which began to ring violently. Hello?
Turning off the TV won't stop the kids from disappearing, Barry.
What? Who are you? How do you know my name?
Come on. Don't be naive. You recognize my voice.
He was right. I recognized that voice. I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that so? Don't you recognize your kidnapper, Barry?
How do you know it's me? How did you know I was watching TV? Why are you doing this to me? Nobody in my family has any money. We lost everything because of you.
You're getting confused. We didn't kidnap for money. We have a score to settle, and we want to pay it.
What?
Those children, including your nephew, will die if you don't rescue them, Barry. Only you can do that. You know where we are, and you know what will happen if you call the police." And without another word, the man simply hung up the phone. I fell to the floor, collapsed, without energy, crying. It was all happening, again, only worse since it was now personal. I decided to go to my truck as soon as I could, but this time, I didn't make the same mistake. This time, I left a note for my parents to call the police. I didn't want to risk calling myself. Who knows if this person had my phone tapped or was watching me all the time? Otherwise, how else would he know so much about what I was doing at that time? I sped up my car and headed for the one place I assumed I would find the children, the abandoned warehouse. Once I arrived, I set up the kitchen knife I had put away before I left and went into the place. As I guessed, the kids were there. Suddenly, my cell phone rang, and I quickly answered it.
"I told you not to contact the police."
"But I didn't." Suddenly, the phone call was interrupted with a huge man grabbing my shoulder. As I turned around, I realized it was him, the same person who had kidnapped me as a child. The man had a terrifying mask, and his whole body was covered with a huge jacket. But that didn't matter. I could recognize him instantly. I did it just by looking at his body, listening to his voice, watching how he stood. This, without hesitation, was my hijacker. Without hesitating for a second, the man brutally beat me and knocked me down. The gagged children tried to scream, but the air didn't leave their lungs. They were truly terrified, crying. The giant kidnapper kept hitting me again and again, incessantly. I pulled out the knife and tried to attack him, but he knocked it out of my hand without any difficulty.
"You can't rescue them, Barry. Your nephew is dead. They're all dead. As soon as I'm done with you, I'll make you look at every one of their dead bodies. This is your fault."
I tried to get up slowly and walk towards the children in panic. I was ready to die. Maybe this way I could free the children. Suddenly, the warehouse door opened and behind them stood the police. I had saved myself. They pointed their guns, asking for the release of the children. Something was wrong. The cops were pointing their guns at me. Frightened, I raised my hands. The kidnapper was no longer there. Had he fled? When I raised my hands, I realized something. I still had the knife in my hand. Hadn't the kidnapper taken it out of my hand? The cops came rushing in my direction, and I just bent down and threw the knife as far as I could. The cops arrested me and released the children. I thought they would say I was innocent, but for some reason they say I kidnapped them. Why did they do that? Had they been threatened? I was found guilty of kidnapping, but they didn't arrest me. They sent me to a mental health institute. The psychiatrist always tells me that I did what I did because I never had closure with what I experienced as a child. She told me that the kidnapper is inside my head, and that I could never separate from him or get over what I went through. His influence became so great that my psyche split into two. He told me that I had been so traumatized by what happened, so scared because the real kidnapper was never found, that I decided to create my own closure. I decided that one way or another, I was going to face him, even if he wasn't real. He also told me that none of those phone calls were real, as there was no record on either the home phone or my cell phone. Since I've been in the psychiatric hospital, I pretend that everyone is right, and I pretend that I'm recovering. But I know I'm not. I'm sure that what I experienced is real. I will prove to everyone that day the kidnapper escaped. Everyone will see that I'm right. Whatever it takes.